Thank you, Steve, for having us. And thank you all for coming. I'm going to read about death. Friend of ours, several of us here, named Garrett Lansing, died on Sunday, and just short of his 90th birthday, and heading out to Gloucester next weekend. That was supposed to be his birthday, and now is his memorial. So that kind of inspired me to. I don't usually plan readings, but I sort of, a lot of our older friends have died in the past, you know, 2 or 3 years. So, you know, inevitably you write a poem about that. And so I kind of, for the first and only time, I'm not going to do this ever again. I've put them most recent to most distant. And then whatever time I have left, actually, I'm on my phone. Whatever time I have left, I will read something else. I'm going to have my timer here. So this first one is called A Wreath of Smoke for Garrett Lansing. Queers hate techies, the sidewalk tells me. Noted. But hard to picture you hating them. More supreme unconcern, as for a flea's opinion. There's a street named Lansing in San Francisco, southeast of Folsom, not quite a full block. Turns into Guy Place, nudge, nudge. My hands drip with blood of what I meant to do. I meant to send you a book like the one you sent us. Spent the day you were dying with Derek finding your book. Spent the day you died reading it. It's called John Ashbery and Climate Change, which I wrote after John died. And oddly, somebody sent me, I don't forget who, somebody sent me his last, the last poem he wrote, and it has the word climate in the title. So it's kind of a weird, surrealistic coincidence. John Ashbery and Climate Change. Reading Africa Fantôme by Michel Louris, when I realized you're the only guy I knew or know who knew Louris. I'm waiting in that pool. I'm doing foolish things like you do at 45 and realize it's been 10 years since I mentioned my age in a poem. What's it mean? Over there, can you hear? I'm down below like Leonora Carrington, who died on my 39th birthday. I liked it when she was alive. As for you, it's like a break in the permafrost to watch that detached iceberg melt into lukewarm reception. And this one's called Harry Sniff. Shaved off my grief beard this morning. Walk the plank of my line. I'm still hearing here in the here and after. Words are so meaningless, and yet, and yes, they're there, and they're there theoretically means the average avant-garde overage puts me over edge. Apologies for emojis, mi amigos. All we do is stave off death in our own ways. Not a bad way to put it. Or what kind of shit can you pull? Worst atrocities of ancestors. The day with barely an ado is a line I love from Joanne Kiger. It seems to signify the way things slip away. And this one's called For David Meltzer, and it's dedicated to his wife, Julie Rogers. I remember sitting there among the books, how they mean everything until you're dying, then they mean nothing at all. I guess there's all sorts of vanity too close to see, by which I mean in vain all I aspire to. Imagine I'd cling to the bitter end, where you're going out like a boss, the guy from the Haymarket riots, say, who bit a dynamite cap instead of waiting to hang. It's hard to see you like this, snoring and gasping for breath. Yet death at home is a triumph, an assertion of personality against an impervious world. Maybe we're in your pyramid. Maybe we're buried with you. It's 12:34. Make a wish, he said, if superstition becomes you. This next one is called Warm Life, and it's dedicated to Bill Birx and Khalid al-Assad. This one I wrote right before Bill died, so be careful. The union president's dead, and they won't let transgender people pee in North Carolina. And here I'm complaining about climbing the mountain again. The mountain will always remain if I'm lucky to keep me from sucking. and only a king mule will do. Humbled by Bill as he goes through the business of staying alive with dignified unconcern. I don't deserve him, have no zen, no dazen, just half a dozen self-inflicted wounds I'm expected to grin and bear. And like Robert Plant, I do. It's like I'm in a Rembrandt or something, holding test tubes to the sun to read my urine specimens, and spoiler alert, I'm trigger sad. Check my email mid-poem, so of course it's bad news. The ancient city is practically gone. Palmyra, Palmyra. At least I still have Bill here in ISIS, USA. And this is, this one is for this poet that I had the fortune to know, named Richard O'Moore, who Steve mentioned. And Richard, Richard was also a filmmaker, and he made all those great films called USA Poetry, among other films. He made a lot of films. But USA Poetry with the only real footage of O'Hara, among other things. And it's called Tractatus. Night ripens and the whole sky hangs from a single yellow nail. Venus below a dish of moon. Below that, San Francisco. It's like that morning walk I took on a hit of weak acid when the city disclosed its character to me after a long opacity. Except in reverse, there's less light in the world now. The world is less explicable. The world is less than is the case since your late removal from it. The most ordinary thing in the world is death, I hear you somewhere say. And for once, I choose not to believe. Venus glows like topaz as if you were there, while I walk to the store for whiskey to give you a proper wake. And this one is called The Cantos Then Tacos. And this was sort of dictated by Barbara Guest, I thought. I had to kind of proofread her collected poems. It was actually a couple of years after she died. And then, so it's a pretty decent amount of poetry. So, you work on it for a day, and then at night, you get these little poetry whispers that I was convinced were coming from Barbara. So I wrote this. The gong flares. Les Paul is more withdrawn. Curtain, curtain. Bypass Mohawk craze. Open failed boutique. Dark hardens and harkens, harnessing yon drunken orchard, yon pretty field. Not in my Los Angeles, not on my budget. Dear blood and guts, we mustn't eat chicken and waffles more than once a week. If it's not against the law, what is? Cracking jokes in two. A darkness underneath lends even this vapor weight. What became of the millennium they used to speak of? Nostalgia for that apocalypse. Oh, dangerous passage of time. Oh, opium dream. The city becomes Los Angeles by a means of mental geometry, rigid grid on fluid spine. The colossal squid's giant eye, wider than a dinner plate, warms its cornea against oily human tentacles. Supreme knuckle sandwich, this science, spume-covered, kelp mouth, swaddled, pain. Tell me, poet, what is pain? Pain is the blank page surrounding the poem, outside of it, predominant. The unsaid pain. Pain grew up on a farm. Pain slept in a loft in Los Angeles drinking vodka. Pain slept in a lot. Pain slept on Zoloft. Hooray, pain. Pain shuts its eyes, impelling itself through the world. Pain even became a connoisseur. Cosmetic pain. Pain makes itself dainty for you. In the blood-green eye of the national turbine, floating events still occur. On the street, a three-year-old girl plucks a dandelion's empty stem and hands it to me, saying, "This is a flower from yesterday." Later at the lake, 2 10-year-old boys. One pegs a goose with a wood chip. Goose departs, furious. I hit it. Hear the noise it made? This, too, investigation of nature or future passion. Los Angeles fauna roll on the flora. J'adore. Let perception write itself. Let perception write itself. Reluctant flaneur, speak to me only with your eyes. Eat the canos, then tacos. Let the radio play in the metal brain of Los Angeles. Let the guitar fret, the gong gong, the tambour do what it do. Give them hell, Schoenberg. We are not prejudiced. Behold yon motherfuckers. Exercise caution, presumptive nominee. This is a flower from yesterday, an apostrophe to everything. I should mention, too, Julian actually published that poem in Alfagaba and actually really affected it. I don't know if I ever brought this up, but it was initially four sections, and when you laid it out, the sections were gone. And then I was like, I liked it better without the sections, so it was very useful. So thank you. Ah, well, someone did.
But I'll take credit.
Just take
it. It was off Gobble, though, right? In there, yeah. Somebody did it. This is 10 10-line poems for Philip LaMontilla. My mental block is hot with cops clubbing my clubbing persona. The walls always never end. Still thinking of you and unable to turn the corner where we last left off, but to be continued. Scene, better days. Desk by the window, a dresser, a bed, bottles in the fridge, and you standing there forgetting what you stood up to show me. You show me you. It's enough. There's a million books in this place. Exhaling impossibly huge clouds of smoke and hearing your voice curl through it, you called getting high turning on, it was both. Your eyes wander from your photograph while you wonder what I'm up to, overseeing old haunts. What you've seen is gone as you are. Here I am and the building is not the same, but it's the same building. Uncatalogued, unrecorded, what you knew swarmed around you like hummingbird wings, like a dozen flaming hula hoops, like 10 bright balls in the air. Where did they go? The laws of gravity dictate looking up in silence. Your voice could encompass the universe, your love envelop decay, your word encircle, your light and rapture, and your hand strike the collective blow as one who sang the world's agonized blood, you. Incommunicable experience of visionary genius, unable to synthesize your intuitive intelligence in prose because you were its synthesis. Leading you by the hand in the dark so you don't trip and fall on the bricks, like tending the one phoenix egg in Love and Silent Terror. Every week you found the wine. Every week, new wine. The manic accumulations. Notebooks, ashtrays, change purses. The accumulated pain of being who you were. Who were you? Saint and Iron Maiden as a refuge from madness. I don't remember who I was before we met, and now that you're gone, where am I? Somewhere else, where there's no one like you, and the me I used to be is equally dead. So yeah, those are the elegies. And that only took 10 minutes. This is a pretty recent one. It's called Emotional Rescue, New Narrative Mix. And I should say there's a reference to Bob Gluck and Steve Abbott in this thing, and it's just a riff off of something that was in this book I was reading called The Estrangement Principle, whose author is escaping my...
Ariel Goldberg.
It was a reference to something Ariel described in the book, so I'm just a riff. Might be a bit cis for this, but here goes. Had a dream and you were there directing traffic. Some kind of fashion stadium artifact tucked between the legs of my reading tour at 4 o'clock in the morning. Dreaming because I couldn't sleep. My lover stole my car in the dream, which she wouldn't do in real life even if I begged her to. There were dead poets and poets barely alive splayed out across campus, and Andrew and Rose at one point. And I tried to get them to take me home, and Andrew's like, it's your dream, G, I'm not really here. But still, I couldn't get away, even losing my shoes to my distress. The museum was all dioramas and a reproduction of a surrealist shelf that shot tiny missiles into effigies of beat poetry, and Bob Gluck and Steve Abbott fighting in the captain's tower over whose turn to ring the mission bell it was. I suppose I was thinking of New College or that room at CCA with the Leslie Scalapino Memorial bookshelf whose contents I couldn't make heads or tails of. I was trying to leave and I couldn't leave still, and you came by with an extremely old poet in tow who broke his glasses in two pieces by the diorama, and I thought I might catch a ride with you and you were like, sure, and still we didn't leave. Like you do in a dream, because it wouldn't be a dream. If you did, you'd be awake. Or awake if you die in your sleep. So please, by all means, dream. And finish the bourbon iced tea so we don't have to dump it and wet the bed of roses beneath our feet, our abusive talents and estranged principles. There was a dead horse stitched into a leather vest on the back of a cowboy next to the rock in the center of campus, and graffiti on the rock, like who flirted or who farted, I couldn't tell. It was faded out in the dry landscape, something in a microclimate that makes you think small. The general U of line 102, not the actual U of line 7 and 84. Slim Harpo says, you remind me of something that happened in a dream, and he's not far off the money in our so-called world or community swimming pool. It's time I whipped out my E-flat homunculus to blow overtures on the soundtrack of the great work I'm up to, said the commencement speaker at the graduation ceremony of the college I imagined in the dream. It was a detailed dream, and you were there directing traffic, and I was trying to go home, but I couldn't wake up in time. And who am I even having this dream, invoking executive privilege and pleading these fits of rage? Who am I, and what have I done with my daughter from the previous poem, where I already admitted she didn't exist? You tell me, dear reader of my poems. You're the expert, after all. And anyway, the dream I mean reminded me of the 90s when I showed up on the scene in the Bay Area, and language poetry was all the rage, and language poetry was all the... And maybe I even have the dream because I just seen David Johansen at New College, which is now a bar called The Chapel, because I had drinks with Micah, who worked there, when there was still a there. I had the same dream again last night, except I was in some kind of antique store and sort of knew the owner, and sort of was trying to find my lover, but she wasn't strictly my lover of line 23, but a composite of all of my lovers. It's not as cool as it sounds. And I took a mushroom from a display case and ate it like a deli sample, and thought about my buddy Charlie skipping my wedding. Still, I actually understand he's leaving town and coming back's too emotional not to recuse himself. Still, that's no excuse for including him in this poem or accusing him of my own thoughts, like you do as a poet. It's too easy not to be continued, like a sitcom from a stand-up comedian, a corridor in a Julian Grack novel, or even a Belgian knockoff. You guys tell me, is it working? Does my butt look big in this poem? The most recent dream involved another stolen car, but I only found out after I inadvertently stole it. I was attempting to gain admission into a houseboat, improbable, I know, and somehow was prone and convinced my opponents to carry me on a litter, as if that were normal. But it probably means my body knew unconsciously I was unconscious, since I knew I was laying down somehow, even as I was driving trucks and attending concerts and having to retake a French exam in order to graduate from a vaguely fleshed out institute of higher learning. Was this the dream of a memory or the memory of a dream? Was it from reading too much Egyptology, the litter, I mean, some king conveyed on a bed of rushes facing east in symbolic relation to Ra? You know the one, Dr. Everything Be All Right. This life you really are on your own, and it's probably the only one you got. Got too many things on. This is called Barking at Horses. Marco's dog Bruce died as he lived, barking at horses and hurling himself over a balcony to protest this violation of the order of things. If he'd been born in Medellin instead of Oakland, it might have been different. But if it wasn't horses, it would have been geese, or God forbid, a skateboard, a bike, or some other human activity he couldn't countenance. He was that kind of dog, but a sweetheart at the same time who wouldn't hesitate to growl at you if he wasn't in the mood. Complex personality. He lived outside a while, and it changes you. The kind of dog who looks gleefully over his shoulder to see if he's pissing you off. The only dog I've ever seen howl in joy or triumph. His comedic timing was impeccable, as evidenced by a collaboration on the film Three Poems, where he plants his paw on my manuscript right as I say the script's too cryptic. He ranks with the dogs of literature and history and film, so make room for Daddy, Rin Tin Tin, and tell Marco we're still friends for life, if he doesn't know it yet. This is called Paris with Suzanne. The figures of my childhood became real to me after they died. Two ancient columns to Mercury in a Catholic church in Montmartre. Several examples of the medieval pocket chicken. An impromptu organ lecture. A Frenchman can stop traffic with one dirty look. The moon is sweet when it drips from the sky. Tailors have fled the Rue de Rivoli. Had nightmares in Paris like you do when you stop doing drugs. Felt the futility of human endeavor, let alone my own. Moss on the grave of Gustave Moreau fills the letters, and Gautier's name is unreadable. The oldest tree in the entire town ain't looking good, but at least one poet lives in the middle of the river on L'Île Saint-Louis. Like a greenaway that breathes on behalf of the city with fingers around its own neck. They're thinking of banning cars, perplexed by Lafair Weinstein, unwanted soul-searching occurring, hashtag squeal on your pig. I loved every second there with my wife, even the scary stairs mid-basilica, and the composition of sentences like je voudrais acheter des bouchons dorés to go to the Rolling Stones. We survived as a couple, different from self-survival, but at the same time the same. A Mirror Too Full for Words for Franck-André Jambe is the title of the imaginary book within this poem that I found for sale at a bouquiniste amid nudie postcards and James Brown posters. They appreciate graphic design. And this is called 1713, which is a number that became a totemic number for André Breton, because somebody thought he had written his initials down, and somebody thought he wrote 1713, because that's kind of how they looked when he wrote AB. And it's a loose translation of a poem that he wrote about going to visit Factor Cheval. By loose, I mean not correct. And some of it is sound, and some of it is Google and other things. So, 1713. Dude, the birds you charm off the Belvedere you built, us birds who don't build nests on your palace since we know it wouldn't be right, who every night only flourish our shoulders to hook up your cartoon wheelbarrow in order to show off our pregnant wrists. We're size fogging up glass statues as we leave the bright cunts on our body, cunts sending wooden deer emails that we can read and naked ladies in the back of my mind. You remember levitating and stepping off the train on the watch of the TGV's roots, who complain about the dead bathers in the virgin forest, its fireplace smoking with hyacinths and a wall of blue snakes, while its singular houses resist gentrification by frisking the bed, the indefinite ramifications of the stairs. It leads to a grindstone gate enlarging a public space on the back of a swan whose wings open into a ramp. It turns on itself like a dog biting its ass, not content to simply open its steps to you, like a chest of drawers, a drawer full of skin and a handful of hair. When 1,000 ducks pluck their vulcanized feathers and return without your trowel to wriggle their pretty titties. We said size didn't matter, but we lied. And we take the attitudes of your pleasure beneath our eyelids forever, the way ladies like to see dudes after they fuck. That is not very like the actual poem, but they give you free free scotch on British Airways still, so I recommend if you ever have the chance, fly British Airways.
And translate for Tom.
What's that?
And
yeah. Let's see. I read a couple out of the book. How are we doing here? Yeah. This one's called Garrett Caples Rides Again. My concealed carry personality has deformed my trouser content. To the extent my permit permits, I'm shooting off often in public. I'm a blow dart in a wind tunnel, aimed in the wrong direction. A boycotted Russian vodka distiller an ass dial away from arrest. I'm that bad Molly going around on the business end of fucking up. That's me in the glass inner office, telling beads on the heads of my foes. Is it genderqueer to be a femme in such an aggressive asshole? Same bat time, same bat channel, but the cosplay's a satin hassle. You'd think my years in a boy band would inure me to humiliation, but this bratwurst from the king is the only thing keeping me. Was I gonna stay alive? Was I gonna stay in and get things done? Or stand in line for a cronut at my age in this tax bracket? They said bananas could get you high. They said lyric poems had to die. They said lick-on tattoos were LSD and toilet seats could give you STDs. The reek of the schoolyard cistern haunts today's items of piety just as readily, but to me, the poetry only grows under such conditions as to hold the candle up to the album to illuminate the grooves. Every time the bucks go clattering, I go numbering their hooves in this inexplicable ritual of anthropologizing up over this 200-year-old carton of cigarettes. I'm ready for my auto-tune, Dr. Luke. I'm ready to head to Toluca Lake to watch the ghost of flappers float over the lawn of the Hope Estate while it's still for sale. Where once I was cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs, I'm afraid I've gone apeshit for Grape Nuts today. I've only got so many colons to lasso your heart away. I'll give two more, and then I will cede the floor. This one's called Travels in Russia. The beds in Russia are worthless, so the overstuffed green leather couches more than atone for this lack of comfort. Wrapped in my sealskin pelisse with a beaver hat worthless in Paris but much prized here, I obtained such semblance of sleep as I'm able without a CPAP machine, which looks like a Russian word. Bring me my sickle for gouging in an Uber on skis behind Harry Nags, and I'm good to go to the carnival to negotiate for Chinese tea. The Byzantine forms are the only ones available to express my feelings for an onion-domed basilica blooming against a harvest moon. If I infiltrate the Kremlin disguised as a nun, that's my own business. If I eat too many herrings before the main course, that's one more elk steak for you. The whole point of coming here is to bring back shrunken customs in tiny Ziploc bags or pressed between the pages of my latest book of poems. Posterity will reward me for noticing those things that escape the Russians themselves, like the color of the air they breathe, the odor of a vodka-fueled radiator. On the deck of a steamer to Novgorod, where the Oka meets the Volga, I'll hurl myself onto a coil of rope and get a better night's sleep than I could in a bed at the Hotel Angleterre in St. Petersburg. By the end of the ballet, I'm sweating buckets. I retreat to my room to bathe myself in cool cigars and contemplate steel-blue twilight through the fine layer of sand sprinkled between the panes of the double window. It's for my own protection. And this last one is called Lovers of Today, and apparently is a pretender song, which I did not know when I wrote it, because it's also something else. So, Lovers of Today is the name of the bar on the Lower East Side where the bartender pours drinks for free after I run out of cash. And I wake the woman from Airbnb at 4 a.m. because I can't unlock the door and make phone calls I won't remember. Whee! Cape House in New York. Two nights later, much more sober, fall on the pavement in Brooklyn. Manage not to break anything, though it hurts like hell in the morning, and my wrist hurts today as I type. And I buy a book at First and Twelfth by D.A. Levy, and I buy a book at Mast by Meltzer, and I buy a book at The Strand by Nicholas Breton, gentleman. And I eat a bacon, egg, and cheese and wonder why it can't be done in San Francisco. A million reasons, but that's what makes viable travel under late capitalism. And I miss Anselm and John Coletti and Alan Gilbert, though we speak, and catch Picasso and Lamont Young. And the night I fall, I'm reading poems by Wieners and Lima with Anthony Cedar and Joshua. And that's what makes that town the best. Thank you very much.